Find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Luke Akins, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Buddy, how are you? Welcome on back, Verbal Shenanigans. We're here for you. We're hopefully like a nice little security blanket for trying times in America. Mike, how are you?
I'm more like a little voice that whispers in your ear to tell you to burn things while you're sleeping. Not really into that security blanket thing.
So you think like our dynamic is like me? I'm kind of like the voice of reason for people. I try to, you know, make them do good things, and you're kind of like the kill your parents, like that kind of voice in the head.
I mean, I'm not going to support parent killing, but I mean, I'll be
wow, bold statement. Bold statement there. You're really going out of line that you're not supporting. Guys, you heard it here first. Mike Berlew is not supporting killing his parents, killing your parents.
You know, I do work on a conservative platform. I will never deny that. But sometimes I got to go a little liberal and say, hey, when you see mom and pops, don't put a knife to their throat, okay?
Wow.
Hey, Menendez brothers, no. No.
Stop it.
Hey. No.
Well, guys, if you are just tuning in, welcome to the show. We are coming off one of my favorite episodes that we've done to date, Mike, and it was the episode with Charles Baker, who that sounds like, you know, you might not know him, but you probably do if you watch Breaking Bad. That was Skinny Pete, one of Jesse Pinkman's cronies, if you will, and we got a lot of good feedback on that episode, so I appreciate those of you who listened, and you keep that feedback coming. You tell us this episode stinks if you really don't like it, but any feedback lets us know that you're out there and that we don't just meet twice a week and spend our weeks emailing random people and trying to find people for nothing. It helps us. It really does. So welcome to the show, everybody.
My favorite feedback from when I was posted on Facebook is when I joined a Breaking Bad group,
right,
which was literally titled Breaking Bad, but unbeknownst to me, apparently Spanish-speaking people took over the site. So okay, like somebody replied in Spanish where I clicked to see translation, where he basically said, hey, why don't you tell me what it is in Spanish? And luckily another person turned around and converted over to Spanish to tell the other. So I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're like, what is this, English? Still listen. I mean, I need the listeners.
Maybe that's why we got like a good amount of listens last week. Maybe we're like killing it in like Spanish speaking countries right now. I have to check the metrics.
We are the most popular podcast that nobody understands. And I stand by it, and we've been going strong for 6 years, going on 6 years. And hey, I mean, The possibilities are endless. Did you know there's more than two languages? I mean,
yeah, I heard that once. I heard that in like a story, but I didn't believe it. But apparently, it's true.
Yeah.
You know, apparently, we don't.
I mean, we should just drive around, and I'll just say something. Excuse me, where can I find the bathroom? And then if they respond with something we don't understand, we're like, you're perfect for our show.
Well, interestingly enough, Mike has an announcement today. He will be doing once a week Spanish version of the podcast for our listeners. So tune in. That's going to be every Friday. Right, Mike? Every Friday? Mm-hmm. Is that, or should I say What's Friday again? Viernes? I can't remember. See, Viernes. I don't know. Yeah, yeah, I think it's Friday. Yeah, so.
Sábado and Domingo is the weekend. And I don't work on the weekend, Spanish people. I apologize. I'm trying to bring cultures together, but the weekend's my time. Okay?
Are you saying on the weekend you take a siesta? Is what you're trying to really pander to your new audience.
Scott, I feel we put the wrong person on this assignment. I mean, that's like an extra word of Spanish that you taught us.
You know, I took four. This is interesting. In elementary school, I was like pretty good at reading and like reading comprehension or whatever. And they actually like moved me up a level or whatever. And I was bused to the middle school for reading and math, like bused every day with like two other kids, which is ironic because I could barely read anymore. I could barely speak. And I'm not very good at math anymore. But, and back then, the translation was like, if you were good at reading at some point, reading led to you being able to take Spanish, which I always thought was a pretty funny, like, I don't know, like, oh, you're good at reading? Now you could take a language. So I started taking Spanish 1, it was called back then, in 7th grade. And ooh. So I took Spanish 1 in 7th grade in high school and, or an 8th grade class, and then 8th grade I took it at the high school or whatever. But, like, none of them counted towards high school, like, credit. So I had to take Spanish, like, 3 and 4 as a freshman and sophomore. And I don't know much Spanish at all.
I think I pretty much brought this up on the show. I took 4 years of Spanish. I can say my name is Mike. I can count to 20. And remember, chicharrones are pork rinds.
Mm. So I love that's good pork rind is good.
Yeah. Llaves are keys. So I know that as well. So that's pretty much all I'm going to talk about when we get to that Spanish audience. And yeah. I'll just keep on saying my name is Mike and then say a random number and and say llaves.
Yeah, it's funny because I do understand, like, if I listen to the language enough, I do pick up certain things that triggers memories. And the one time I actually did, like, feel like I started to know a little Spanish was when I worked in the restaurant, and all the chefs and cooks were Spanish guys, and they would talk to you in only Spanish, and you start to pick it up when you are, like, immersed in it. You do start to, like, I don't know, remember certain things. And that's the, I would say at that point in college was the most I understood in Spanish. And I would make them, I became pretty friendly with a bunch of the chefs, and I would make them talk to me in Spanish, and I would try, like, really hard to talk to them back in Spanish, and they would, like, correct me and stuff. That was by far the best way to learn. And then again, it's been years and years and years, and I've pretty much lost it again. But
yeah, I mean, I got good grades in Spanish, but pretty much that summer break happened, and then I would come back, and I didn't even remember a single word from last year. Yeah. So I would have to basically start off just refreshing myself. How do you say dog again? What? And then kind of build my way back up from there. But oddly enough, I kind of remember they had the same kind of criteria like in my junior high. I kind of remember they gave us all like a test where it was like an audio test where they would just say, somebody would say a Spanish word, which is like close to like three other Spanish words. And we had to guess which one it related to.
Okay.
And from that decided only the people who got good grade, a good percentage on that could take Spanish before high school, where it was kind of like, shouldn't it be the opposite? If you want me to learn Spanish,
yeah, right.
And I did bad here. Don't you want to start me early before I go up to high school and still go, yo, what the hell?
Yeah, and now like kids take Spanish like starting in like first grade, they have the Spanish teacher, which makes complete sense. You learn it early rather than late when you're like kind of a big ignorant idiot like most high school kids are. But
well, that's how they do it in Europe and all the other countries. That's why they can all speak 4 or 5 and we're all the same type of like, hey, you come to my country, you speak English, but when I come to your country, English better be somewhere.
Yeah, that's generally what I like to yell at people, like when I can't understand them. I say, this is America, you speak English here. That's what I like to yell at them very intently, like very loud. I like to get in their face a little bit and yell that. It's weird. Every time I do it, I see people like whipping out their phones and stuff to try to like catch me on video, but I'm too quick. I'm too quick. They can't get me, you know?
You're the racist ninja I've been hearing about. Gotcha. Speak English. Where'd he go?
The racist ninja. Yep, yep. That's me, guys. I'm revealing my identity. So, yeah, look for Mike's Friday podcast called El Verbo Shenaniginos, and it's going to be great. It's going to be really get us on the into a new dynamic, so and a new audience. I'm really excited, Mike.
Absolutely, absolutely. Italians need not apply. We don't care about you.
Yeah, well, I mean, come on. No one does. I mean, what?
No.
Mike, I have come to the conclusion during this quarantine time, this time home, that I'm transitioning into an old man. I just...
No more... hijinks whatsoever.
My biggest concerns in these days have become my lawn, watering my lawn, painting. You can see now I'm wearing a tank top because I have horrendous sunburn from yesterday. So I just have like old man sunburn, like just on my arms, like in random spots. The other day I caught myself like spending the entire day like trying to figure out why my grass is dying in certain spots. If you looked at like YouTube history, it's like how to stop grass from dying, how to start growing lupines again, which is like some kind of flower I bought, like how to make why is my lawn dying? Why does it have random yellow spots? And it's like driving me insane. I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. I'm out there all the time, and yet my lawn is drying out. My lawn has spots on it, and it's driving me absolutely nuts.
So when you were younger, your biggest problem was your skin drying out. Now that you're older, it's your grass.
It's getting to a point where it's becoming an obsession, where I thought there were spots in the backyard. Now, my lawn is not big at all. My lawn is pretty small. I live in like this lake community where like the houses are kind of smaller, and on top, they used to be all like... lake bungalows, kind of, and then like people started liking that and build on top of them. But so my lawn is not even big, and I started noticing like little yellow spots like forming, and I thought it was from the dog peeing. Like I thought it was just dog spots, which is
that's why you don't care about your dog's kidney stones,
right? Right? Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I give him all those things to block him completely.
Or is that a separate issue? Is it like I care about my lawn, but I also don't care about my dog?
So
just totally unrelated.
They kind of go together.
Okay.
So I said the other week I thought it was the dog's like urine spots, and I water the lawn after every one of his pee, which is really funny now because after he pees, if I go to even lean towards the hose, he sprints inside the house like 100 miles an hour because he's just completely afraid of it. And I'm like, dude, relax. I'm just watering the grass. Like I think he thinks I'm gonna like just soak him or spray him with the hose.
Why don't you yell at your dog, hey, why don't you learn English, and then skedaddle?
Oh, I do. But he's half English bulldog, so that's why I bought him. Oh. You know, if he was like a Spanish...
So he's got the proper English going. He needs to hear about, like, crumpets the apples and pears.
The king's speech, you know? So then I did a little bit more research, right, into these yellow spots. They're still forming. And I think, Mike, I have what is called grubs. I have little insects under the grass that are causing these little spots. So I go and buy another thing of whatever, $30 bag of fertilizer, more soil, more seed. And I'm out there digging up every piece of dead grass and laying it down. And then, like, I'm starting to grow new grass. And then I look over the other spot. There's more spots forming in the old spot. So it's just this constant game of me running to the hardware store, buying soil and fertilizer, digging stuff out, getting new grass growth while old grass is dying. I have no clue what to do anymore. I'm lost. And if you have any landscaper listeners, I need your help, man. And now my front lawn, which was looking immaculate at one point, is now slowly starting to dry out, even though I water it all the time. I don't know what to do.
Now, do you have your Home Depot or Lowe's guy that you just talk with on a regular basis, or his first name is like Jimmy? Yellow spots again, bro.
I don't yet, and I think I do need to. I go in the hardware store like a ninja. Like, I don't want to talk to anybody. I mean, maybe it's like pandemic. Like, that's how I've been conditioned now, because it's like, oh, get in, yeah, get out. But there is a guy at the local hardware store that's really, really helpful that I don't feel like I've been nice enough to. And I think he's the guy I need to open my heart up to and start to really explain what's going on.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you'd think he's like remembering every time you came in. He's like, hello, sir. And you're like, and you walked away. And he's like, I'm not going to do it again. I'm not going to do it. That man doesn't deserve my high. He doesn't need to know about lawn care.
It's certainly a possibility. Do you ever like you go into stores or interact with like strangers or whatnot, and you don't give them like the time of day, or you come off a little short, or and then think about it later, like why was I a little bit mean to that guy, or why did I not want to like interact, or do you ever focus on interactions like way after they happen?
Well, I mean, you kind of know me for a while. I'm a little socially awkward, so my first thought process is kind of always, like, if I'm there for some reason, I'm not the most talkative human being. I'm just kind of like, hey, and, like, I really hate getting in those spots where, like, if I know exactly what I want to do and go in, I just want to go in and do it, and then when that person tries to be friendly talking, like in the back of my, I'm trying to convey niceness, but in the back of my head, I'm like,
yeah,
let me go, let me go, let me go.
Right.
So, I try to put up a front, but I also know sometimes it doesn't always show. Like, even with like Izzy was just like, well, you were very shortcoming with that person. And it's like,
I get the same thing from my wife. But I do the opposite. I make a lot of jokes with like people we know, and I'll like joke around, and we'll be laughing, and then she'd be like, "You were a little mean to Hunter the other day." I'm like, "Really?" And I was just joking with him, and like, you know, and I think that like people who aren't used to like being sarcastic all the time, and like, I don't know, to me, like my communication with somebody is basically making jokes, you know, like joking about things. That's where I really relate to someone, you know, like so I don't know if that comes off weird to other people, and it almost sounds like I'm insulting them, but I don't think I think just maybe like my wife or like other people pick up on that, but it is interesting to hear like other perspectives, like, oh, was I actually being mean to this dude, or is that just how someone else sees it? So I don't know.
Well, for starters, there's never a bad reason to insult a person named Hunter.
True.
That's just my feeling. Your parents gave you that kind of name. You deserve every sarcastic answer that comes to you. That's number one. Number two, I guess, like, I kind of bring that, I'd say with, like, most conversations, like, when me and a wife are in the bedroom and we're chatting with her friends on the phone. Like a lot of I'm not a guy for the most part.
I know
that
I know.
Has to say, oh, be quiet, you. That I'm not a guy who's like in a conversation. So I'm going to say like 7 or 8 sentences in a row and have a back and forth. I'm kind of the same way where it's like, I'm listening to the conversation, I'll wait for my moment, I'll throw a joke out there, everybody chuckles, and I kind of sit on the sideline and wait for my next kind of intro back in there. But the only thing I could say is sometimes as I kind of rely on throwing the jokes out there, you got to kind of relay the whole, oh, I'm just kind of kidding kind of thing to make sure it's extra smooth. If you insult somebody for an hour and you say at the end, I'm just kidding, it's good.
I feel like, especially when I grew up and where I grew up, like I grew up in the suburbs of New Jersey, and that was just the language we spoke, was just make fun of each other relentlessly to the point where it didn't mean anything anymore. It's just like the jokes actually don't mean, it's actually more of terms of endearment when you're able to get your balls busted a little bit and bust someone back and wait, you know. The minute you do something dumb, you make fun. Like, it was more like that's how you got along, and that's how the conversation was. Like, but I don't know. I guess it's taking me this long to realize people aren't all the same, Mike. I'm just realizing this now. Like, they all aren't raised the same way. They don't interact the same way. So,
Just I'm surprised it hasn't led to anything like in social justice or anything like that, where somebody says, you know, we're all the same.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm surprised it never occurred to anybody that that might start something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just, I think men and women see things differently. I think people see things differently, like from where you come from, or if you grew up more in a around a bunch of guys out in the parks and the basketball courts and stuff like that, you talk one way. If you grew up in more of a, you know, in a household kind of environment, you might speak a certain way. You might be afraid to. So it is interesting. I mean, and I think that's what's, I think, like, doing comedy now is going to be even more interesting when this is all over. Like, it, we cranked up the another level of being offended, and another level of justice, and another level of what we can talk about, and who can say things, and who. So I think comedy, luckily, like, I don't feel that much pressure on that, because a lot of my comedy is like about me and like my family and old jobs I had. Like, I don't usually dabble into too much because I don't really know what I believe in at all. I'm not passionate enough about anything to have like some amazing comedic viewpoint. Like, I don't see myself as like a Bill Burr, someone who has like Dave Chappelle, who has these amazing like thoughts on society and issues. I'm more of like, here's this funny thing that happened to me, like, and here's why I'm so awkward and weird, and here's my family story. Like, that's kind of more of my thing. But
yeah, comedy is gonna be an interesting spot if you're not like really flushed out in your comedy, because like you said, you got the part where it's like, all right, we got a new layer of sensitivity out there.
Yep.
Then you add to it, it's like, we all have this common thing with what's going on with COVID, but point blank, nobody wants when they finally get out of the house, hear 12 different comics do their take on COVID, you know?
Right.
And like, everybody's going to be like, oh, I was so bored and this and that, and try to come up with something. But it's going to be one of those subjects. It's like, one, nobody wants to hear about it. And two, everybody's going to attempt to try something with it. So
yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how long it takes to find like really fresh material, if you will, out there.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was going to save it for my promotion thing, but I'll talk about it now right before we get to guests. We, I got permission to do a outdoor comedy show where I live, in this lake community on this field we have. And I had just thrown it out there, and I didn't think it was going to get approved. But apparently, and even the guy told me, like, ah, yeah, like, there's so many rules and this. And then he texted me, like, the other day, where it go? I'm like, oh, my God, crap, really? Like, now I got to think about, like, one, how to set up an outdoor comedy show and not make it feel so big and you know, insane. You know, outdoor comedy's always been hard, and that was before any of this happened.
All right, I got an idea for you. Hear me out. Hear me out. Okay. So you all live by a lake, right?
Yes.
So everybody gets in their backyard, and you're in the middle of the lake, standing on a buoy, telling knock knock jokes.
What's funny is I was suggested, like, they were like, "What if you did something where people boat up to the?" I'm like, have you ever been in a kayak or anything where you're just constantly like spinning around and adjusting where you are, and power boats, I always have to be like, and like kind of move around. And like, even when you're anchored, you kind of got, all you need is people like, oh, I got to go. Like, I'm in the middle of a joke here. And the boat like leaving. I said, I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that. Like,
that would be like the ultimate bomb. Like, you're telling jokes and you're not hearing anything, and you just hear some guy trying to crank up his motor.
Yeah, yep. I said the other
son of a bitch.
I said the other day, when I was doing comedy for that Zoom show I was doing. I said, this is better than like these drive-through shows where people stay in their cars, because what is worse than bombing and seeing like two headlights looking at you and just backing up slowly and pulling out of the parking lot while you're on stage? Is there anything worse than that?
Some guy rolls down the window, yo, I need a jump!
I imagine like talking about my dad and my relationship and then someone just being like, and like the lights beaming in my eyes. I'm trying to power through it while the rest of the cars are trying to listen. There's one like big truck leaving. That sounds awful to me. Like, I don't need comedy that bad. It's something I love. I'm not completely sold on the people staying in car kind of shows. I don't know if I can do it. I don't know if I can enjoy it.
Who is that? The AC Jokers?
Well, they do that. Yeah, there's been a couple. I give them so much credit for doing it and so much credit for keeping it going. But yeah, so I'm going to do this show. I just booked the lineup and whatnot. But, people are going to be socially distant and people are going to bring their own seating. And I'm going to bring the sound and the lights and try to make it. Now, knowing the community I am in, I did do a show for them last year on it. And it was amazing. Like, they loved it. There's a lot of partiers and people who are looking to have a good time. And no one's been out in months. But it's still going to be weird, because when you're outdoors, that laughter doesn't bounce off walls. The ceilings don't keep it in. There's no... But people don't know, comedy, the biggest mistake they make is they set it up in these big gymnasiums with giant ceilings and they space tables out and have a dance floor. That's the worst thing for it. You want people basically on top of each other, like tight, intimate, right next to the comic. And clearly that can't happen anymore right now anyway. So it's going to be interesting. The laughs are obviously not going to be as... tangible, like right in front of you, but I think it's going to be okay.
Okay. Buy 50 mics, another speaker system, and if everybody laughs, you know, you'll have the speakers right by you, so you'll feel better, even though they're socially distant from you.
See, Mike, I was thinking I was going to pump in crowd noise like they're doing for the soccer games.
Okay.
I'm thinking I'm going to pump in, have someone behind the curtain, just be like... like pressing buttons, you know, like laugh tracks. It's going to be like a Seinfeld episode.
See, I would purposely then book like the worst comedians of all time, because it would be just more hilarious as the laugh track keeps going and everybody just looks.
That would almost be like a really fun, like candid camera kind of show. You like have cameras on the audience faces, but have laughter pumping through the speakers as these terrible comics are up there. It'd be a fun social experiment. Nobody's laughing! like getting yelled
at. I mean,
in the back.
I've been out of comedy for a while, but I can give you probably a few names that could do that show for you and all to do the experiment.
I have a revolving top five of worst comedians. Like, there's a couple, and like, they're always fighting for who is worse in my head, but.
I still got a number one in my head.
Mm. I'm curious about how it's going to go. It's going to be in about 3 weeks, so it'll certainly be something to. Talk about. I'm going to make a little video with it too. I think I'm going to video like everything leading up to it and just setting up and just trying to do like a see how the outdoor thing goes. But I don't know. It's funny because we're talking about taking care of lawns and speaking other languages, and that's where my life is going. Our guest, on the other hand, might live the the polar opposite of my life at this point.
You feel his is not as exciting as yours? Is that what you're trying to say?
I don't know, Mike. Mike, what's the most extreme thing you've ever done?
Extreme thing that I've ever done? I did diving into a lake when I was in Bulgaria. They took us out in some part, like country part of Sofia, Bulgaria, and then... Like there's like this big lake and we're on a rock structure, and I mean, I'd probably say we're probably up about 12 feet diving into the water and so forth. Like,
so
some
like
guy,
a cliff jump kind of
cliff jump. Yeah.
Did like you go dive? Because I think the guys who go dive formation are insane. I always have to, I've done cliff jumping, but I have to do like just jump in like feet first.
Yeah. I just do jumping. I have no skills whatsoever.
God, people who go full dive. Oh my God. It gives me anxiety.
Mm. I mean, They just know what they're doing, I guess, and all. It just takes one mistake, in my opinion. It's like, I didn't want to go through the hassle of having my parents need to ship a body from Europe over because I didn't know the proper tuck form on my dime.
You think
you know?
Your parents would pay the shipping, or they'd just be like, we'll visit him one day?
Well, maybe they're like, that's pretty expensive. Can you, like, chop off a limb and send it to us?
We'll lighten the load?
Yeah, you know, we'll put it. Yeah, just like one at a time. When we have enough money, we'll have the entire body over. You know, put them in a fridge somewhere. It'll be fine.
Or the opposite. Wait a couple weeks. You'll be a little bit lighter, you know? Like,
oh, I got you. Just leave me out in the sun.
Right, right.
All right. You lost a few pounds. Okay.
I would say most extreme thing I may have done was fly a plane. I thought was pretty, I don't know. I guess that's not that extreme. But I mean, I rode a horse in the ocean. That was pretty cool. But our
well, next we did our 50th episode. That's right.
Yeah. But our guest tonight puts us to shame. He's not talking about grass growth. He's not talking about his dead grass. Our guest tonight is the first man to ever jump out of a plane without a parachute. No, I'm not talking like one of those dudes who goes and grabs someone and gets a parachute, which is insane.
Nope.
He went all the way down into a net and had to land in a net.
He was skydiving commando, if you will.
Yeah, right? And he does so many different things. He's a base jumper, a pilot, an aerial photographer. He's good friends with our former guest, Aaron Fitzgerald, who was one of my favorite episodes this year. We have Luke Akins coming on the show, who, again, I think it sounds like a wonderful country music name. But
he lost his finding in life. He should have known. But, like when he's like, "Dad, I'm gonna jump off the roof. You will pick up a guitar and you will like it, young man.
Put the cowboy hat on. Sing about your tractor, damn it." but I don't have a tractor. You do now. So we have Luke Akins coming on the line, and very excited to talk to him. This guy is basically as extreme as it gets, and. Here we go. Let's get Luke Akins on the line. So thanks for giving us a few minutes here. It's different seeing you sitting down.
Yeah.
So where are we calling you at? Where you live?
So right now I'm in Arizona.
Okay.
Down here. I've been on lockdown at my home in Washington for the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. This is the first trip out and about. Came down here to Arizona for a little skydiving.
It's got to feel like feel amazing. That's like not just like going out of the house to like take a walk around the block. That's like a pretty you know, pretty relieving thing. That's pretty much the complete opposite of being locked down.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like seriously at home with the family the whole time, and now I'm out here with my buddies doing some skydiving. So.
Not bad.
Feels like a semi-vacation.
I was about to say, like, out of curiosity, was there, like, an official, like, notice or something when this all happened? They said, well, skydiving is also not allowed, because it seems like something you would easily be very far apart from.
Yeah, the only issue is riding up in the airplane. The only way that the skydiving centers make money is to pack us in like sardines and get you to altitude and then kick you out. So that was it, kind of. And down here working skydiving, doing some coaching down here, so we're under a little bit different rules when we're coaching.
Yeah, in the air it's pretty easy to be socially distant, I think, but as far as like skydiving and whatnot, where did you get your start? Like, were you a guy that just wanted to try it and did the whole, you know, pay to go, or where was the first jump for you?
My grandpa got shot down in the war. Tried to get out of his airplane. He was flying a P-47, got shot down, couldn't get the canopy opened up, ended up crash landing in Allied territory, and always wondered what it would have been like that day if he got to jump out with those old silk parachutes, you know, back in the war.
Yeah.
And came home from the war, and him and a buddy a bunch of years later went out. He was talking about, man, I wonder what it would have been like that day. He went to a club in the 60s. Uh-huh. Liked it so much, they started their own club, and that started their long family tradition of, you know, grandpa running a business, my aunt and uncle taking it over, and so it's a family. I'm a third generation skydiver.
Really? So your I guess your father too was, or yep. mother? Or,
yeah. Yep. My mom made about 70 jumps. She quit jumping when she was about 6 months pregnant with me.
She was wait. So she was jumping while.
Yeah.
I just picture, like, you know, the baby in utero, just hands. Wow.
I mean, that's the most amazing story. Most hobbies don't start with, well, grandpa almost died, so we're all doing it now.
Yeah, he liked it. He started his own club and got way into it. My dad started jumping when he was like 15. I started when I was 16, and who knows when my son will start.
Like, has he been talking to you about joining the business? Has he been leaning in the direction?
Yeah, Logan's got, I mean, I don't care what he does. He can do whatever he wants, but I just can tell he's into it, you know, from his dirt bike riding to whatever. He's one of those guys.
Now, let me ask you, when you go to date and get and start a relationship with a, you know, your wife and whatnot, what are, like, is it kind of like a ease into process to trust you that, like, this is perfectly safe? And then, like, yeah, this is skydiving. And then there's what you do. Like, you know, then there's the level you've taken it to. Like, how does the family dynamic work, especially early on?
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know what rated your show is, but it's kind of like you start out a little bit nice and easy, and you work your way up more and more. Okay, so yeah, you skydive, that's great. Oh, you do it extreme. Oh, wait, you're not going to wear a parachute. Walk your way up to that. Fortunate enough, this no parachute jump ended up being kind of a family deal where, you know, I had a son who's 4 at the time.
Right.
Now he's 8. So, you know, it was definitely not something I did without her being involved, and she knows this is what I do, and she supported it as long as we did it the right way. You know, we didn't want to be like the flip of the coin guy that, like, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. So as long as we proved it out before we went up and gave it a try, you know, we mitigated the risk down to what I felt was acceptable.
The thing I loved how you just told that story is it almost sounds like the bases with the relationship. Like, first base is, hey, honey, you know, I do a little extreme stuff here and there. Yeah. And then, like, second base is, well, sometimes I'd like to go really high. And then it's like, sometime I have less equipment. And then the home run is just, babe, I left a parachute at home. We're good. I love you.
Right. Pretty much how it works. Just the tip.
Yeah, I mean, how do we not get it into your parachute list, I guess that's the right terms, jump? Like, when did, all right, you got to break this down for the simpletons here. When did the idea of this come, and what goes into planning such a thing? Like, how do you go about knowing, okay, this is going to be safe, and planning that? You got to give us a peek behind the curtain here.
So the short version is I got 20,000 skydives. I skydive for Red Bull, travel around the world,
right?
Jump into really cool things. I helped Felix Baumgartner jump from the edge of space.
Yep.
128,000 feet, first man to break the speed of sound without a vehicle. And then I got a call from a guy that says, hey, you know, Luke, we see what you're up to. We see what you're doing. I got this great idea. We need you to sign an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. And I'm like, cool, I'll sign that because you get to hear about cool projects. And then they told me what they wanted me to do. They said, you don't want you to jump without a parachute. And I said, oh, with the wingsuit? A guy already did that. Gary Connery landed in some cardboard boxes in England. He kind of crashed into 18,000 cardboard boxes, which was sort of cool.
That's awesome.
It was really cool, actually. And they said, no, with nothing. You're just going to free fall. And we're going to build this big slide. You're going to land on this slide and come out. And I laughed and I said, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks, man. I got a wife and a son, and this isn't for me. I turned it down, actually, but I said, I'd love to help you find somebody who could do it and figure out how you make something like that happen. Then I started losing sleep at night thinking, you know what? I bet you could do this. I bet there's a way to do this safer. And then I came up with the idea of the net, and I talked to my wife, and she said, yeah, I mean, if you think we could do this right, and, you know, we do it the right way. So I called him back, and I'm like, I'm in, but we got to do it like this.
Some guys got to sell their wives on a speedboat or maybe going mountain biking. You're like, yeah, I'm just gonna jump right out of a plane. No safety gear, nothing. And I find it interesting that someone called you and asked you to do that instead of, like,
it was weird. It ended up, it was something that I had never really thought of. And I was like, oh, you know, because people jumped out, like Travis Pastrana jumped out, right? And he hooked up to a guy who had a parachute on, and they hooked up and they landed, like, tandem style, which is awesome and super ballsy. And this one was such a different thing, you know, it was so much bigger. And also, I didn't start out with my wife like, yeah, I'm going to jump without a parachute. I started off with, hey, we're going to get paid to see if it's possible.
Yeah, smart. You're smart.
We're not going to necessarily jump without a parachute, but we're going to see how to if it can be done. And then you work your way up to it again.
I was watching a video, like, I guess you were giving a speech about the whole event. Like, I found it interesting, like, you had to work with like NASA to figure out the calculations of this. And the other thing I really enjoy is like your debate back and forth where they're like, well, we think the net should be like this with like a big balloon on top. And you're like, I don't know about this. And you're throwing dummies down to figure out everything. I mean, like, how long is this process of figuring out the solution before the day of?
It was about a year and a half of back and forth on stuff, and then about 6 months of pretty much every day working on different ways to make this happen. And you know, we were open to all ideas in the beginning on the team, and then we started narrowing it down from stuff that didn't work until we came up with the system that's actually very simple: this netting, some air cylinders, and to control the descent rate. And then the big one is being able to hit it right. I mean, you got to hit this little postage stamp from 25,000 feet.
Yeah,
and once you jump, there's no way out, you know what I mean? There's no backup plan. There's no like, oh, you hook up to your buddy or whatever, you know? Once you jump, you're fully committed. There's no backing up.
And, you know, you have, whatever you said, 20,000 jumps or whatever it is over time and doing different things. But is there still, like, when something comes like that, like, still, like, a high level of fear and anxiety? Or have you figured out ways to manage that?
So we worked with sports psychiatrist Mike Gervais, famous, works with NFL teams, Seahawks, like really famous sports psychiatrist. And I worked with him on this. And, you know, you're going to have doubts and you're going to have these things creep into your head. And how do you overcome those things? And back to the question before, it kind of all ties together that I looked at it as a giant science experiment, right? I was getting paid to try to do this cool science experiment. And really, I'm only going to risk my life one time at the end if everything works, if everything's lined up. If not, I'm not doing it. I'm cashing their check and I'm hanging out.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the ultimate plan B right there. Doing all that. Nope. Thank you. I'm curious, like, with everything you have to factor into this, is there like something like, you found almost like weird and amazing that you had to like factor into getting this precise jump prepared and all? It's like something with like the suit or anything that like us just like watching on YouTube would not think is like a big issue trying this.
So what's interesting, and if you were to get in a river, right, and the river's moving, that's like the air current, the wind, it's moving all the time, right? And if you had to swim upstream to try to stay in the exact same spot on the shoreline, and then the river changes speeds faster and slower, and you have to swim faster, swim slower, it changes direction.
Yeah.
That was the hardest thing that I learned, is that I had to angle my body and position myself. Sometimes I looked like I was going forward this direction, but really the wind was fighting me the other direction. So learning to be able to stay in one spot, which we never do in skydiving, we just drift with the wind usually when we're skydiving. And this, you had to align yourself specifically, like looking at a beach and not getting moved by the tide, and try to stay in that same spot all the time. And that was something that surprised me how difficult that was.
Mm. Oh, I thought you were going to say it was easy. So we had the pleasure, I would say January, maybe it was February, but we had Aaron Fitzgerald on the show. And, you know, he was an awesome guy. He's the one who recommended us reaching out to you. And, you know, he's, for those that don't know, he's a helicopter pilot and whatnot. And he was kind of, it was cool. He was explaining, like, how, like, the community is kind of like, okay, someone comes up with this crazy idea. And then it's like, okay, let's all be like, that's crazy. But then everyone, like, gets together and tries to, like, figure out how to get it done. And we've had Kirby Chambliss on 3 or 4 times on the show. And It sounds funny, but it's like, it's amazing that all these people can kind of get together and figure such a crazy thing out. We don't hear about too many like accidents and things like that. When you, what is like, would you consider what you did that jump the most extreme thing you've done, or are you guys always thinking about how can we top this and make something more amazing?
I mean, to me, hands down, it was the gnarliest thing I've ever done. And yeah. In our sport, in our world, it's probably the gnarliest thing because for those sure. of us that skydive, the actual skydivers that know what it's like to jump out of planes and know everything about it, right? Of people with 20,000-30,000 jumps yeah. that come up to me and like we understand the risk, right? Yeah. Like it's they know every yeah. part of what had to happen to make that work.
Yeah.
So what's really cool is that big group of community, a lot of really cool stuff starts with a beer around a campfire, right? You're telling stories, oh, I'm gonna do this, so I should do that. And then you go yeah. home and you start figuring out, well, is that possible? You know, how can you do it? Like those guys with that idea, Chris Talley, when he called me up, and so I'm like, yeah, no thanks, man. That's not for me. And then it starts you thinking, like, is there a way to do this?
Yeah.
You know, can I do something? And for me, the coolest part about it was the research and development, all the testing up to the day of the jump, right? The day of the jump is the icing on the cake. The nerves are there a little bit, but once you make the decision to do it, you have no choice but to focus. And it's a week later, 2 weeks later, when you get home from the Today shows and traveling around and doing the little media circuit,
right.
You sit home on the couch and you watch the jump on TV and you're like, holy heck, that was a lot bigger deal than that could have gone a whole nother direction there.
Yeah.
Well, how were you feeling like the night before? Now, were you just like relaxing, talking with the family, or is there anything you're kind of doing where it's like, this could be our last time together or having a last meal? Were you kind of just in the zone, like everything's going to be fine? And was there even like a creep of a doubt in your head?
So I didn't have that doubt of all that stuff. You know, my wife and I had a little walk on the beach, not the morning of, but the morning, like 2 days prior. Mm-hmm. And we had a walk on the beach. And like my wife and I are sitting there. It's early in the morning. The sun's coming up. And, you know, I asked her a question. I said, you know, where's our son? Where's Logan going to be? I thought he would be sitting with her when I did the jump. You know, they're there. And she said, no, I want Logan to be with my parents because if something happens to you, I have the rest of my life to be with our son, but wow. I want to be next to you.
Yeah.
And that was the first moment, like,
wow.
Oh, God.
I mean, dude, it was a big, like, and we talked about all the stuff. And she talked about, you know, we'd flown down our own personal airplane. And she's like, if something happens, how do I get the plane home? What do I do with it? I mean, she was thinking about all of those things where my whole focus was hit this little net, right? I wasn't thinking about all of that stuff. So that kind of was the only moment before the jump that really, it was a really good talk, but it was like the real stuff. You know, we went in with our eyes wide open of the possibility.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I think that with anything, like personally with me, like doing comedy, like, you get in this zone where you're like, I got to get all these shows and be out in the city and find it. And all of a sudden it's like 5 days a week, 6 days a week, you know, like as many days. And all of a sudden the wife's at home every night and, you know, you get selfish sometimes or narrow, you know, tunnel vision on your goal. And you got to kind of, you know, think about the family goal or the, you know, the two of you. So I know it's not as extreme yeah. as jumping out of a plane, but.
It's super interesting to me that you say that because I had one of these interview questions where a guy read questions off of like a chat room type of thing where someone asked some questions. And someone said, one of the questions was, Luke, what would you say to people that say you're selfish? You know, you have a wife and a family, and why would you do something like this?
Right.
And, you know, I sat there for a minute, and first I was going to say, oh, I'm not selfish, blah, blah. And I, like, thought about it for a minute, and in a rare moment of honesty, I was like, you know what? Part of me is selfish, I guess. You know, you don't do something like that if you're not in it for you, you know? Like,
yeah,
I mean, you have to be a little bit selfish to go out and do these things. I think it's part of all people that end up at that level. There's a little bit of, well, it's out there for me.
Right. It's like the, you know, the Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary that's been out there. It's like that same thing. You watch this guy and you're like, man, he's a jerk. But God, he's like, everything he says, he backs up, you know, and he has to be like this most selfish, extreme, like cutthroat kind of guy to be the greatest at something. So it is always interesting that give and take of like how the great ones do it, you know, how they can they balance a real life and be the best at something.
Yeah, for sure.
Out of curiosity, when you hit that net, like the speeds you're going, is there any pain? Is there any like whiplash? Is it just as comfortable as like jumping out of a tree and landing in a hammock.
Yeah.
Right. So my stunt coordinator, Jim Churchman, had built this big contraption. We called it the trap, with these air cylinders that absorbed the impact. And we dropped the dummies. Aaron dropped them from a helicopter. And we'd hit the net most of the time. A couple times we missed. But we'd hit the net. And we'd check the G-forces. So by the time I hit it, I was going about 130 miles an hour. And I was definitely left of center, by the way. I didn't hit a dead center. And when it hit the net, it did not even knock the wind out of me. That's how soft the impact was. Like, I said a few choice words, F yeah, as I like rolled into the middle of the net. So right. It didn't even knock the wind out of me. It didn't hurt at all. I had nothing sore the next day. I had a little mark on my right shoulder. I'm not a tattoo guy, but it was a net print. Like someone hit you with a tennis racket.
Yeah.
I got a picture of it, and if I ever got a tattoo, recreate. That's what I would get on my shirt.
But that's funny. Like, as I saw the video, like, I even said to myself, like, that looks a little off. I mean, you survive, obviously, hey, but I'm like, whoa.
So the net's 100 by 100 feet.
That's
and
it.
The dead center of it then is 50 feet from the edge, and I was about halfway to the edge. So I had about 25 feet to my left, I would be off the net. But I had some light system. And a GPS in my ear telling my ground speed. So I knew exactly where I was going to hit before I rolled to my back. I knew I was left of center, but I had like a zero airspeed. So I was coming straight down. So I actually said to myself, I won, right? Before I flipped over, I was like, I won. This is over. I got this.
That's amazing. Now, you know, like it's a lot of times we see that just the jumper or like just the driver of a car. But it's clear that you have like a whole team behind you and it sounds like pretty high tech and a lot of planning. And how do you guys like? Where's that funding coming from? Is it just from one project that someone wants to do, or is it from advertisers? Or like, because it does sound like it's pretty involved. And you said it takes 6 months to a year to really, you know, get that done.
So this particular project was sponsored by Stride Gum, like the chewing gum Stride, which is owned by Mondelez, which is a big snack food company, right? They own this, and they were looking to promote their gum brand. And I happened to be at the right place at the right time where they were willing to take a risk. And I mean, it's unbelievable that a sponsor would believe in you enough to let you jump out of a plane on live TV, right? Mm-hmm. Live TV, 7 second delay, live TV for the whole world to see without a parachute. And they're willing to back you and stand behind that, which is pretty amazing for a brand. You know,
you'd love to be in on that meeting before they even reach out to you. Like, you know what we need to sell some more gum? Someone to jump out of a plane with no parachute.
But I thought of something. What I would have been, I've been the guy who said, okay, before you jump, I want you to blow a bubble and hold it and then jump out. And then we'll be like, well, he survived thanks to Stride Gum.
I'm glad you weren't in the meeting.
Yeah.
Scott wishes that half the time himself.
Yes.
you have coached Navy SEALs. You've helped out Brian Vickers on jumps and stuff like that. When you hear like their stories, is there anything you hear where you're almost like, wow, that's crazy. I would never do that.
Yeah. I mean, like I helped Brian Vickers and he was jumped into the Daytona Speedway for like a Pepsi thing or something. Right. And I helped train him for the jump, and we jumped in there, and we had my rental car parked on the, like, in the pits. And I was like, hey, Brian, you think they're going to get really mad? They need us here tomorrow if I ripped around the track at Daytona just in my rental car, right? And Brian goes, well, they'll get mad at you, but not at me. So he hops in the driver's seat, out in the passenger seat, just my rental car. And the way those – just that's for example, those drivers. When we're going around that bank corner – and that wall was like this far. And I was like, hey, man, I didn't get the insurance. Because we're like ripping around the corners, man. Like some of that kind of stuff, like I don't think I could do or would do, man. It's gnarly.
Well, like that's kind of piggybacks on what I want to add. So like when you're not doing the jumping and you're not in the, aerial world, like are you kind of like a adrenaline junkie elsewhere, like a speed guy or something else? Or are you like at home, like just reading the Harry Potter series, like what like,
yeah, definitely not that. I would say that I'm more on the little bit the wild side of that stuff. You know, I'm not a crazy fast fast driver anymore, you know, but I got a dirt bike I ride around a bunch. I have an airplane that I fly. I definitely like the more extreme. You find yourself gravitating towards that, yeah, whether it's skiing or whatever you're doing.
So you did this jump, like, which is, like you said, the craziest thing in the community. Is there, like, a natural plan to, like that you're working on something to top that, like, or do something else? Or is that, like, the pinnacle of what you're going to do here?
Yeah, I think, like, I don't think I try to top that one. I mean, what do? Make a smaller net, let yourself on fire? I don't know what you do.
I don't know.
You're trying to win 25.
Stride Gum is listening to this podcast. That's a great idea. Hold up.
I am working on another project right now. And, you know, in the middle of, for me, my projects, they're all paid for by sponsors, you know? So you're out there hunting down the guys to fund the next thing. What I'm working on right now, I'm going to fly one airplane. My cousin Andy's going to fly another one. Nobody else in him. Just me and one, him and the other one. We're going up to 13,000 feet. We're going to put the planes in a dive. And then we're going to ghost ride the airplanes. So I'm going to get out of mine. He's going to get his. And we're going to switch planes. I'm going to get in his plane. He's going to get my plane. And then we're going to bring him back and land him.
This sounds like a conversation me and my friends have, like, seven beers deep by a campfire. Like, I'll get in your plane.
Exactly how this started.
You get in my plane. We'll turn them upside down. It'll be great.
You remember ghost riding the bikes off of jumps and stuff as a kid?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. People ghost riding cars. I remember, like, a lot of rappers would do that in videos. So you're doing it with a plane. Yeah, no problem. That sounds normal. That's crazy.
Hey, you also done some, like, stunt work for, like, movies. Like, when they describe to you those kind of things, do you almost even go back to them? Like, no, we can do way crazier stuff than this. Hold up.
No, man. A lot of the movie producers have ideas that are just like, well, we have to tame them back because they're used to CGI, right? Yeah, when they're used to Iron Man flying around and doing this stuff for real, you're like, well, that's not quite possible, but we can maybe do it like this. So on the Hollywood jobs, it's really cool, but they also are, man, their insurance and their regulations, everything's a lot stricter, a lot harder. You can't just – it's not like they give you a GoPro and say, hey, go do this,
right?
You know, which would be way easier sometimes than jumping through the hoops.
So where do you, like, other than the diving, the extreme stuff, you've also done, like you said, training, and you've done some, like, aerial photography. Like, what is something that, you know, I'm sure you get all the questions that we've asked you about the jumps and the extreme, but what is something that we wouldn't think about, like, that you do get to do through your job, like, that's more of a, I guess, more of a skill set than just jumping and being, like, do you, like, as far as either film or capturing images and whatnot, is there something that, like...
Yeah, the filming is really cool, like, wearing the cameras and stuff, but what I've really been getting into lately, what I've learned from the projects I've done, right now I'm project managing a project for David Blaine, the magician. He's gonna do this cool project, and, like, I'm helping, like, I like that part, and it's sort of different skill set, right? Because I've been the dude in front of the camera before, and I know what it takes to do it physically, to do some of these things. And so now I'm helping behind the scenes, because I can kind of help be the link between the producers and what they want, what the athlete wants to do, and what I see as the cool way to do it, you know? So I'm kind of flexing myself into that direction, because, I mean, as I get older, I'm 46 now.
Yeah.
As it's get older, like, I have a couple more projects that I want to do, but then I want to step back and help somebody else do some cool stuff.
That's awesome. Mm.
Will he at least tell you the trick itself, or is there, like, a magician's code where you're just on a plane or like, nope, you'll figure it out in the end?
I mean, the thing we're working on, I know about, but the other ones, I mean, I'll be standing next to David and he'll be doing tricks, the same trick I've watched like 10 times.
Yeah.
And I cannot, I mean, I'm just going to stare at his right hand and it blows me away. And his style of magic I like because it's very street
magic.
Just
walks
up to dude, he sits down with cops in a coffee shop and just, like, he doesn't know if they know him or not. Like, I've seen guys not know who he is. Hey, you guys want to see a trick? And he starts doing tricks. And a couple tricks in, they start realizing that this isn't just some dude, right?
You're going to go to dive off a plane with him and go, like, oh, your parachute's gone, you know? Wow, you've done this before. Figure it out, Luke. go ahead, Mike.
As we said, we talked to Aaron, we talked to Kirby Chambliss. We've had like 5 or 6 like Red Bull athletes on our podcast. Just out of curiosity, can you tell us about like what Red Bull does for these like extreme sports and a relationship you have with them?
Yeah, so it's really cool to me, and I wish I could get this out to people to understand. I mean, right now with the COVID and everything else, everything's on lockdown. But before that, before I got involved with Red Bull, I was out doing all this stuff. You know, I had 12,000, 15,000 jumps before I got involved with Red Bull.
Right.
And I was out doing this stuff, but we were doing on a shoestring budget. We're all sharing five guys in the hotel room, and we're like, don't have the best equipment, and we're just out there doing it, right? Then Red Bull comes along and asks you to become part of this family. And they always are there to help me, right? Like they help us do stuff. Sometimes they say no because we have these really cool ideas that we want to do. And they're like, no, no, no. But most often for the relationship that I've had with Red Bull is that they've just helped me do something I wanted to do in a safer manner, right? Like they have the funds that can make something a little bit safer that I would be going out doing on my own.
Right.
That there's a lot of kids out there that are younger than me that are jumping, that are trying to make their bones in it. They're out there taking a lot of risks that I don't have to take because I have this sponsor, you know, backing me up.
That's awesome. Luke, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes here. I could pick your brain all day. Before we go, is there somewhere that anybody hearing this or people checking out your videos can, what's the best place to either communicate with you or check out what you do?
I mean, my Instagram is just my name, Luke Akins. You can check that out all the time. I'm not so into promoting myself. I like to let other people do that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the videos are on YouTube and Red Bull's like definitely pumps us up out there. I'm just not that great at doing it. I just love talking to you guys and like telling my story to people. And what I like to get out there about this thing, and like, it sounds a little bit corny, but I wanted to show that you could do something that seems impossible.
Yeah.
Something that you doesn't even seem like you could do, and you could do it without risking flip of a coin. You know, in the end, I had to risk it all to step off the plane. But I didn't just step off the plane not knowing what the outcome would be, right? I was 100%. I had done 82 jumps in a row opening my parachute below 1,000 feet right over the center of that net. You can't crinkle up a piece of paper and toss in a garbage can 82 times in a row. So I was 100% certain enough to have my family there that I could do it. So I wanted to show the world that you could do anything if you just take the time and the process to get there.
Absolutely. I mean, you made it to this podcast. I mean, look at your dreams coming true.
Pinnacle right here.
This is it. Mike, you had one more or no?
Yeah. I mean, with everything you've done and like everything that's going on in life and all, is there anything small out there that like, does Luke Akins get afraid of like spiders?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of spiders and snakes, but honestly, it's going to sound funny. If I'm on the roof of the building and I'm like leaning over to clean a gutter or something, that spooks me out a little bit, which is pretty funny for a guy who makes his living skydiving.
I could see that though. Like I would go, like I've never been skydiving, but I would go skydiving before I would go bungee jumping. I don't know. It feels, I don't know. Yeah. Something about like, I don't know. But I guess I kind of see what you mean there. But Luke, thanks so much, man. Stay safe out there. And we really appreciate the time.
You bet, guys. I appreciate it. Super fun one too, man. I do a lot of interviews that aren't fun, and this has been more of a conversation, and I like it. I really appreciate it.
All right, bro. Now we just got to throw you out of a plane without a parachute.
Yeah. I mean, well, we know we can get it done once.
Listen,
I mean,
Stride Gum was behind his jump. Verbal Shenanigans, I'm going to speak on half of Verbal Shenanigans. We're behind this jump. We're all behind this jump. We want this to happen.
Yeah, Scott, I've looked at the Verbal Shenanigans budget. It's not looking the same as Stride Gum.
Listen, I promise you, I will give you what we make monthly from Drone Clone Experts. I will give it to you.
Wow. Maybe that'll be our promo. I'll have like two of the drones in my hand as I'm jumping 120,000 feet from the sky.
Well, maybe they could just follow you down. Like just, you know, someone controlling the drones could film your death.
Oh, wait, what was that last word?
You know, nothing. You know, it's funny that this reminded me, and this quick talking point. You know how we once had the sponsorship on World Chase Tag? which was still one of the coolest random moments here. World Chase Tag is a professional tag game they play in the golf platform. Basically, like parkour meets tag. And we had the Verbal Shenanigans logo on one of the platforms they jump on and do flips on. Did you see that? Like, there's like a fox or something. It's like basically it's like ultimate tag. Like it's the same exact thing, but I see JJ Watt and all the sponsorship behind it.
They got all the Watt brothers, JJ, TJ, and Derek on there.
Okay.
And they seem to be meshing tag with American Gladiators because the taggers are called like Banshee and Viking and stuff like that. And
hope it's
and
not like, Zap.
If Zap
catches you, she bores you to death. You can't finish the course.
She just starts telling her story. You just slow down. Yeah. Can't keep my eyes open. No, don't grab my.
By the way, we had Zap on the show, American Gladiators. Whew, horrendous interview. But anyway, so did our boys at World Chase Tag just get copied and just left in the dust?
Well, I think, like I said, World Chase Tag is kind of more parkour. Where this ultimate tag, they got different things. Like one of the tag things is you're kind of like in a steel bubble above everybody. And you can stay inside the bubble or you can climb around like monkey bars to get to the other side. It's not exactly the same, but enough for their lawyers to say, no, we're not giving you
exactly. I really hope our pals Christian and I forget the other guy's name are...
Devereaux, was it?
His last name is DeVoe. But I really hope they're in some kind of lawsuit or got paid off on the side for their idea because it's exactly what it was. But those guys were cool. We had them on twice actually. Mr. Luke Aiken. Luke Aiken sounds like a great like country singer name.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. Like I looked up Luke
for Garth Brooks would like not even like training anything. People would just cheer for the name and all it. Oh, it's got
to
be good.
Like you can totally hear some. I went to the Luke Aiken show last night. He was amazing. Like so, maybe when his diving career comes to an end, he could write some sad country tunes and make a second living. But yeah, he was awesome, Luke Aikens.
Did you see the store, I think it's Spirit Halloween. Do you see they are not going to open up those pop-up stores this year for costumes?
No.
Yeah.
They're famous for taking over basically any vacant business they'll pop in.
Basically every old Circuit City, every old JCPenney, that they just instantly grab that space.
So are they going to just like online orders? Like you just shop online and just ship? Because that's basically, I'm almost surprised that's not what every store does at this point.
I don't know if they're like out because I don't know the setup. You know, it's like when you get like a Pizza Hut, you have to like pay a licensing fee and then like you find the land, but I'm not sure if it's the same concept where it's like, well, I have to pay for the license to open up a store to sell stuff, or if it's something different. But they're basically saying that, you know, with the way the economy is and the kind of shakiness, if we're going to have a Halloween or if there's going to be like big parties where adults are going to go to, they're basically not going to open up stores this year.
I don't think this is that big of a deal, and I actually think it's a smart business move because, like, one, they probably pay a ton of money, even in just rent, whatever they rent for 2 months, I guess, probably like September, October, a little bit of November.
I think they start in like late July because or August or something.
So they do 4 months, whatever, 3-4 months. I bet you the rent's very high in some of those buildings. They're usually big, you know, they're usually big places, right? So we don't even know what school is going to look like, never mind Halloween. So I kind of, you know, like everything nowadays can be done online. Like you think about this. Like you go to a Spirit of Halloween or whatever, a Party City. There's a limited amount of things you can try on or look at or whatnot. you go on Amazon or you go on just a Google search, you could pretty much find any costume imaginable and right. order it, you know? And now you're also talking about people trying things on and people touching things and people, like, those stores are always like mayhem during that time. Like, you know, people would mask trying on masks. I don't know, man. Like, it's just, I think, you know, like, people putting on those masks and then someone else coming in putting one on. Like, I can't imagine that's a good business model. So yeah. I bet you're just going to consolidate all their stuff into an online store and order it.
I mean, it makes sense. And on, like, even like a few times I've been in one of those stores, you can tell they don't, like, the employees they had, they don't care because they know their job ends in a few months anyway. They're never really that clean because they don't care because they're moving out there. And you can tell it's just like there's no setup. Like the employee lounge is just like a freaking curtain up. So they go to the other side of the vacant building. And
yeah, I mean, at this point, too, everyone's been to enough of these Halloween stores where you know what it is. Like back in the day, it was kind of like cool. Like you go see things. But now it's like, you've seen every option imaginable. You know what cheap costumes are going to be. You know there's going to be that weird like thing that you clap and goes, ooh, you know, like that, like is on your porch.
And those things are always like $500 where I'm like, who has Halloween budgets of this where they can do it? Like well, there's somewhere that like the monster will be like 7 feet. It's like, oh, step on this sensor. And it's like, ah, I'm like. Well, like, where am I putting that when it's not Halloween?
This
is
a good topic, too. Like, what does Halloween look like in pandemic days? What does... So, I know it's a Saturday this year, and but what does it look like for kids? Think about that, man. I mean, you're going, like, door to door. They're dropping things in, you know. I think you might see a lot of, here's a bowl, grab things. No interaction. I don't know.
I mean, I was thinking about the bowl thing, but the problem is, again, even, I mean, well, number one, most kids will grab that bowl and take all of it. But yeah. Number two, even if they're good, it's like you're still progressing the issue because you're grabbing it with your bare hand. And then somebody else is going to come around and put their hand in the same bowl and we're going to play the whole same game again. So, I mean, I don't know if it's the only thing I could fathom is like, kids come to the door and then like somebody slides out three treats for them.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like everybody's got to have a doggy door and just have like one of them, like the pizza shovel paddle things and just like push it out from there.
I'm going to have some kind of code on the door. Like if you knock the right way, you get more treats. If you knock crappily, you get like just nothing. You get a penny, you know, like might be kind of fun. Like you have to figure out like a little puzzle. Like if you're like, ooh, I'll throw you like 400 Reese's, but if you're like, I'm just giving you the one.
I got you. So it's almost like a Dungeons and Dragons kind of game where yeah, it's right. like you just knock and you're like, oop, you upset the wizard. You're getting those penny keys.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. Halloween's been really. Going south for kids for a couple years with the trunk or treats on the it's just not the same, man. That was like that was one day, one of the days per year you got a little freedom, go out with your friends, go around the neighborhood a little later than normal, you know, like. And I don't even understand the overprotectiveness because like now it's like kids like as young as like third, fourth grade have a cell phone, right? So it's like, hey, be home at this time. You can literally track them, be like, okay, they're right around the block, they're fine. Like there was back then, it was like, you know, I'd go out and just go forever, like, and then my mom would be like, be home by 9 o'clock or whatever it is, or you know, you're in trouble, and that was enough to get me home and that was fine, you know. Like
I remember like my dad took me and my friends to like a neighborhood that I'd never been in my life. And I'm like, what's this? He's like, oh, there's.
Oh, this is Harlem, son. Here. This is Harlem. We'll see.
Yeah, but it was like, how's it never heard of? He's like, well, I heard this is a good neighborhood for trick or treating. So I'll be back in an hour for you kids.
Yeah.
So, yeah. In fact, where it's like, I don't even know where I'm going, but all right, I guess I'll see you in an hour. Hope everything works out.
Doesn't that all feel weird now? Like going, something, being dropped off by your parents, and then even just being picked up without a cell phone, and just like knowing when they're going to be there and at the place. Like that whole concept feels so foreign now. Like I remember we used to go to the mall, no cell phone or whatever, and just walk around the mall for whatever. I don't know why that was fun, but be like, pick you up at 9 at the JCPenney entrance. Like now, like, you know, within the minute they're going to be there. There'd be times you wait for 20, 30 minutes, but where's my parents? Oh, I got stuck up at the, I got held up at the ShopRite or something. And you didn't panic. You just like survive. And then there would be other times you'd be late and you're, my parents would be like, where were you? I told you 9 o'clock at the blah, blah, blah. You know, like, mm-hmm. That concept is gone. That whole like responsibility of being somewhere at the same time. I remember before cell phones going to New York City, like, and meeting people. Like, hey, we'll meet by the blah 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 at, you know, whatever. That amazes me that I was able to find anyone.
No, and if you didn't know it, you try to find somebody to point you in a direction, or if you were a little older, you could do a map quest on how to get there. That's how we did. You would have to actually put some thought into it versus the whole, I don't know if I could do it, Mom. Well, don't worry, I'm going to be watching you every second, and coming to the point where they're just saying, well, screw it, it's on a Tuesday, so you got to go into this parking lot where we're going to give you candy, and it's not going to be special.
I bought a bass guitar on Craigslist from some girl, and she made sure that we met at the New York City post office because there were cameras all over the place, so I guess that I wouldn't kill her. But this was like before any kind of like internet phones. It was more like text. You know, text was about the extent of it. And to me, even now, that's just amazing that we made that work. Like we were able to exchange this bass guitar for cash at a certain time in New York City. I don't know, man. It's like technology is definitely amazing, but it's definitely killed like a certain part of our brains. Like a survival part of our brains is dead.
Yeah, and you did the transaction, and then she walked away from the post office where there was no cameras, and then you killed her like you planned. Everything Listen, worked out perfect.
I'm just going to say, I got my money back, and I love my bass guitar. That's all.
I mean, it's got some brain chunks in it, but it hums, baby. That's all
I know. Victor Wooten would appreciate it.
Now, going back to the Halloween thing, out of curiosity, you remember like any kind of dress up for like school or Halloween or anything to note, like extra weird that you can remember?
Like that I dressed up as, or just like people?
Yeah. Like if you want to think about it, I have a story because I just randomly, as I was like in the kitchen one day, I kind of remember this. So I don't think it was for Halloween. I don't even really remember what possibly the assignment was, but I remember like in the third or fourth grade, they're like, all right, all you're gonna pick an animal and you're coming into school in like a week dressed up as this animal. And
a week,
I really don't know why.
So is this where your man pup thing like started? Like you just were like,
no, I didn't do pup. I did not do puppy. But here's like the odd thing, no explanation. I to this day don't know why I said spider. Just threw it out there.
Okay.
Say, I'm coming into school.
Which immediately sucks because you need more limbs immediately. Like, you just need, you know, you only got four, so you got to ramp it up.
Yeah, so add to it and all, being the third or fourth grader I was then, I basically told my mom 2 days before I was due.
Okay.
So she had to ramp up.
I love where this is going. Up.
Yeah, so what she had to basically do, she went to the store and she bought like, I would say probably like 4 or 5 packs of like pantyhose and a bunch of like cotton. Okay. And she had to get like a black shirt, and she had to stuff the pantyhose full of cotton and like sew it onto my shirt. And then she's like, well, you can't have hair. So she shoved pantyhose on the top of my head. So I had about, eight pairs of pantyhose into the school as a third grader.
I pray that there is a picture of this somewhere. Somewhere there's got to be a picture of this. Your mom's got to have it in some kind of like box somewhere.
I don't think so, because again, this is third or fourth grade, so we're talking early 80s, so you know, camera like photos was a rare thing right there. No, right. Even if you got the picture, you would have to send it out to get the film developed. So I'm not aware of anything, but I kind of just remember having to get on the bus, like just my whole body pantyhose and extra.
Yeah. And you just attended school like that? Mouth. Like you just, like you, my biggest thing is like you sat down and like did math, like as this fucking man spider.
As a spider. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then like part of the assignment is like, what is a spider? How does all your animals move? And I'm like, I don't know. So I think I like laid down and had to like crawl to kind of make it look like I'm a spider walking.
Oh, God, I can picture it, too. I can picture because I've seen you, when we did a show at a mail review, get on the floor and try to sell a joke. So I can imagine fifth grade Mike is probably no embarrassment at all. You probably were like, I'm a spider. Like, just this is so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was so cool dressing up in my pantyhose that day. I was awesome. So.
And since then,
I was like, out of the blue, I just remember it. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I forgot about that memory.
That's great.
So, Alex, curiosity, Scott, if you like got a genie and you got one wish and you had to pick one, would you rather see Mike Berlew the spider or Mike Berlew the toothbrush?
As much as I love this spider story, I think it's phenomenal. But I feel like you approached this with confidence and you owned it. So it's probably like cute almost at the time. Like, it's probably like, oh, Mike's a spider. And I'm sure there's some other weirdos in your class that are dressed up as something else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The toothbrush. You dressing up as a toothbrush, being miserable, and having to be carried off the stage because you couldn't bend down is... There's... Like, Judd Apatow might buy that now for his next movie to make that a scene. Like, that story, you can't make that up. You know what I mean? Like, just the idea of you being like, oh, okay, got to get off stage and like trust falling into yeah. somebody else. So
I'm gonna say my lines as every parent is laughing at me, yeah. and my acting buddy, she's laughing at me as I'm punching her to say her next line.
I'm a toothbrush. That will never get old. That's like a story that will definitely be brought up again at some point in this podcast. But the only thing I do remember is being a scuba diver, and my dad like spray painted like Pepsi bottles yellow, and we made like a you know, like a tank and everything on my back. But I remember I thought it was a good idea, like, so I wore like a skin tight black outfit, but then I thought it was like a good idea to trick or treat with goggles and flippers on. So imagine being like like trying to go around the neighborhood with flippers. It was not a pretty scene. So
I imagine him, your feet getting like stuck walking and all, and it's probably like walking around with like 10-pound weights on you.
Yeah, it's not good. But you know what was good? Another great hang tonight, bro. Another beautiful episode. It's beautiful. It's the finest episode. It's the greatest episode. People come up to me and tell me that's the greatest podcast episode. That was my Donald Trump impression. How did I do?
Yeah, I'll give it a... I mean, it had its moments. I'll give it a 7.
Oh, yeah. I would give it like a 2. But anyway, no, it was a fun hang tonight, guys. Luke Akins, fantastic. Guys, it's been like a really fun run for... I know this pandemic stinks, and we're at a time in America that no one likes each other and everyone hates each other. But look, we love our fans, and we love doing this for you. So I hope the love comes through, because we got a whole bunch of good stuff coming up on the way. Also, nobody has gotten the guest for this week, so I might put up another thing that's a little bit more easy to get. No one got it last week with Skinny Pete. I thought someone would get it. I really was holding on hope that someone would get it. This next one, I'm going to throw you guys another bone probably tomorrow, but for Monday's guest. But we have like maybe 4 or 5 episodes like kind of dialed in with some really fantastic guests, so I'm excited for it. Berlew, anything to promote before we get out of here?
I guess I will promote, since we wished him a happy birthday yesterday, Randy Santel. He's been on our show 3 times. He is a professional food challenger, if you will. He goes to restaurants and tries all these challenges about eating 6 pounds of this or the hottest of that. He's back on tour for the moment. If everything went well in Texas, though I've been hearing stuff about them shutting down again, he's doing a little bit of a tour there, doing some food challenges. Check him out on YouTube. It's amazing all the work that he puts into doing the challenges, training for them, losing the weight, and so forth. He was a great guy to chat with. Go on YouTube and look up Randy Santel and go to his website, randysantel.com.
He was also a great guy to drink wine out of a bag with in my house and then have him
pass. You say that about every guy that does that.
and have him pass out on my floor in the entranceway of my house. That was pretty cool. But yeah, Randy's the best. And I'm just going to promote, because I have this show coming up, I don't even know if it's going to be open to the public, but it's going to be $20. It's July 18th here in Denville, New Jersey at Indian Lake in the Field with a killer lineup. I'll be hosting that night, but Matt Jenkins, Kevin Israel, Mike Burton. It's going to be a really good time, and I think it's going to be a celebration of getting the hell out of the house, man. So go check that out. And guys, go check out us. Our last episode was one of my favorites in a long time. Tonight was another one. We've been really putting out some cool content, some good guests for everybody. So go check out the last 10 episodes. You will not be disappointed. We have another 5 or 6 on the way that I guarantee you're going to be like, oh, that's pretty cool. But other than that, check us out on all our platforms. We're out there. Just Google us because there's a lot we're out on. And please leave a review on iTunes. Guys, that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye.
See you, my spiders.